the Regular Hours, episode 140 for December 1st, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Heat Miser, Chip Essenflow.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
And we are here. We made it to December, guys. 2020 is about to be removed from history, but we have to keep up the good fight, because if we don't, then 2021.
Well, 2020 is still here for another month, and still, you know, plenty of punches are coming our way.
Nobody's going to laugh at that joke. That's fine. I'm going to tell it for the next month, regardless of whether or not anybody ever listens or laughs at it.
So officially, the holiday season is upon us. Black Friday was last Friday, and you know, that means that we all socially distanced our way, whatever we ended up doing for that. And now we're all preparing for the trees and the lights and all that other fun stuff that makes the holiday season so wonderful.
So one of the great ways to make the holiday season wonderful is to think about some of those nostalgic pieces of memory. And we have with us today one of our good friends, one of our more talented friends. Mark Voger has put out so many great pieces of nostalgia, so many great books. We've talked to him about his Monster Mash book and Groovy. And now he's got a new book for the Christmas season this year called Holly Jolly. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Chip. Good morning, Pamela. How are you today?
Oh, we're doing very, very well. We're very excited to talk a little bit about Holly Jolly, celebrating Christmas past and pop culture.
So tell us a little bit about this book and what we would find if we picked up a copy of this one.
The tagline is a joyous sleigh ride through the history of Christmas. Basically, it's a timeline that goes back to 4 BC and brings us up to kind of the 80s, but the golden age for pop culture for Christmas for modern audience was the 30s through the 60s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It all seemed to happen there. All the stuff that we still, the songs we still hear on the radio, the best animated TV specials that we still look forward to every year, it all seemed to happen during that period. But it's wild, like in my research, to find out that like so many of the ways we celebrate Christmas now existed as early as the 1600s. You know, there were Christmas carols and an early incarnation of Santa Claus, and it just built every year. By the 1800s, by the time of Dickens' Christmas Carol was published in 1843, by then it was almost like modern Christmas, almost like it is now. You had everything. You had Christmas trees. You had everything. So I'm just kind of connecting the dots and putting it all in context, trying to. But it's mostly, as with my previous books, Monster Mash and Groovy, it's a visual thing. It's very visually oriented, very colorful. So I hope it's fun. I hope it's fun for people.
In fact, let's talk a little bit about your book a little bit. How is it different? How's pop culture different than celebrating the religious part of the holiday?
It's funny you should ask that, because I'm a South Jersey Catholic schoolboy at heart. But I grew up in what my brother and I reckon to be, have been a 85% Jewish neighborhood. So we had to go to a neighboring town in order to go to Catholic school. So my neighborhood was like air raid dark at Christmas time, because there was only like one or two houses that had Christmas lights. And when I say some of my best friends are Jewish, it's not in the Archie Bunker sense. I grew up in playing in the households of, or the rec rooms rather, of a half dozen Jewish households. But one day I found out, the nuns told me that Jewish kids couldn't celebrate Christmas. They weren't allowed to. And I was like devastated. You know, I was probably in first grade, and I thought, you know, oh my gosh, they can't have candy canes and watch Rudolph, and Santa Claus doesn't leave them toys. You know, it was devastating. And then one day I asked Mrs. Sidewater, I said, I feel sorry for Howard, her son, because he doesn't get Christmas toys. And she said, oh, Howard gets Hanukkah toys and Christmas toys. So that really blew my mind. And then for the rest of my life, I wondered what Hanukkah toys were and how I could get them.
They're not great. Just to let you know, Hanukkah toys are not great. They're pretty simple. That whole idea of the eight crazy nights of Hanukkah and getting 8 days worth of gifts, they're pretty small, crummy gifts, just so you know.
I was picturing like unpainted wooden toys from the 19th century, you know. But anyway, to get back to your original question, Chip, I think that through pop culture, through the fact that I think Christmas is for everyone. I think we all know that. You could be a Reagan Democrat or a Kennedy Republican, whatever you are, you can celebrate Christmas. And I think it's thanks to pop culture, thanks to all the songs and the lights and the Little Debbie's Christmas tree cakes, like the animated shows. I think it made it so that it's a big party and everyone's invited if they want to be, you know. So that's why I think the pop culture angle is, you know, so important.
And I really liked in your introduction when you talked about exactly what you've just said here, that a lot of these traditions, they're decades old, and the traditions that people do, but also the kinds of foods, the various ways that we gather to celebrate Christmas. And I guess I'm really wondering today on December 1st, 2020, how do you think COVID is going to impact, you know, Christmas? And having just had Thanksgiving, you know, how do you think, will we start to create new traditions around this Christmas, or will we double down on the traditions that have been happening?
I think we had a dry run on Thanksgiving. I mean, nobody, when it first started in, you know, February, March, April, we had the lockdown. Nobody expected it to last this long. Now we're actually, I'm predicting 2023 when we can finally see it in the rear view. At this moment, we're still setting records for new cases and deaths, and it's just every state in the union, you know. So I do think that Thanksgiving was the dry run. Most people I know, personally, did socially distance and did not go to big gatherings and wore masks. I had my Thanksgiving was just with three people, and we wore masks unless we were eating. Some of the ideas that they came up with for Thanksgiving, like you make the mashed potatoes, I make the stuffing, and then we portion it out and drive it to everybody's home. And then we have a Zoom meeting and we're all eating the same food that we all made. Like that's a cute idea, although it sounds like more hectic than the holidays usually are. But, you know, my brother always throws a big open house Christmas Eve party. And he's not doing it this year, you know, because you know, this is just awful. So I think this is going to be our year to still huddle and to you know, try to reach out to family members on the phone and try to keep our own traditions, you know. And my little slogan for Holly Jolly this year is make Christmas merry again. It can only be used this year, that it's obsolete. Hopefully.
Well, and I really liked how you talked about how your favorite part of Christmas is the 24th rather than the 25th. And that struck me as very, very relatable. There's a lot of evidence, as you noted in the book and from many social science studies, that we prefer anticipation to reality. So like for most people, their favorite day of the week is Friday, which is anticipating the weekend, instead of Sunday, which is like the weekend, but now you're already anticipating Monday. So I guess I'm wondering if you think that, I don't know if it's just my feeling or if it's true. It feels like Christmas sort of, the season starts earlier each year. That's my impression. But I felt like this year in 2020, I mean, there have been Christmas lights up since before Halloween in Connecticut. I don't know if that's true where you guys are, but.
Well, I'm in the South and they've been up all year round.
Okay. But that's sort of like the need to anticipate, the pleasure of anticipation and sort of extending that out seems like a really important legacy of Christmas in pop culture as well. And maybe that's partly a commodification of Christmas, or maybe it's something, I don't know, a little more like emotionally necessary, especially at this time.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Pamela. And when I first realized that I liked Christmas Eve better than Christmas was sort of a practical reason as a child. I just remember that on Christmas Eve, we were preparing for the big open house and everything was all exciting. And then at Christmas, usually sometime in the afternoon, you would realize you had no more presents to open and you couldn't eat another bite. And then you just realize, oh my God, Christmas is over and it's only 4 o'clock, you know? So that's another reason why I liked it better. But yeah, you're right. This year is different. I never minded, a lot of people protest, but I never minded when you started in late September to see the Christmas trees up in Home Depot or whatever it is, yeah. You know, I it always like warmed my heart. Like, and actually I have, my house is decorated for Christmas for the past 2 years while I was working on this project to keep psyched for it. And I don't know if I'm going to be taking down my 1950s sparkly silver Christmas tree ever. I think it's become a fixture.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of my favorite jokes from the Peanuts Christmas special. I'm sorry, from the Easter special. It's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown, is when they have to go to the department store and it's the pre-Christmas sale and it's going on. It's in the background. You have to look for it, but it really is. It is joyous to see it. You touched on the Christmas that we're experiencing maybe today, but when do you think pop culture and Christmas began?
I think it was, it's amazing that in the same year, 1843, we had two things happen, actually in the same country in England, actually in London, the same city. They were both print media events. And I think that they really made the switch. The two things I'm talking about, of course, are the publication of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And then the other event, same year, also in London, was a gentleman named Sir Henry Cole, who was the founder of the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. There's a tradition, they still have it around, but a tradition where at the end of every year, you'd write a letter to everybody that you love, and you would tell them what you did all year, you know. And he was a busy man, and he decided that he wanted to come up with a quick solution for this obligation. So he created the first Christmas card. He sketched out an idea that he gave to an artist named John Calcott Horsley, and it was a whole bunch of well-heeled, well-fed Brits with toasting the viewer of the card, saying, you know, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. But tellingly, off to the sides, there were little illustrations of people helping the poor. So it was on people's minds, I guess, you know. Certainly, it's the main theme of Dickens is look out for your fellow man who don't have the things that you have, you know. And sadly, you know, that the need for that has never gone away. But that's the moment, I think, where Christmas became a pop culture thing.
So, in fact, let's go a little further in this. Is the pop culture Christmas, is that the real Christmas?
Well, you know, there's purists who will say, you know, who have the bumper stickers that say, keep Christ in Christmas, and that's fine. But again, that the notion that it's for everyone, you know, it doesn't matter your creed, doesn't matter. You can keep Christmas in your heart. The amazing thing about the pop culture version of Christmas is that it is about charity. Your most charitable impulses, you know, that's why Salvation Army does their best business in December. And that's why, like when you look at the Christmas episode of The Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason as Ralph Cramden gives Alice a beautiful speech at the end where he says that when it gets, the closer it gets to Christmas, people are nicer to each other. Even in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, section of Brooklyn there, if you walk into each other, instead of cursing each other out, you say, how you doing, pal? Sorry about that. You know, it's very touching. And the message of all those wonderful animated specials Christmas episodes of established TV series are always about, you know, they always have a Scrooge character and he always kind of gets redeemed, you know, so and gets on board with like, yeah, let's be nice. There's only one character, I think, I'm just going to say this, the one Scrooge surrogate who didn't get redeemed, I think it's Old Man Potter in Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. His last line in the film, Jimmy Stewart runs past the window and says, Merry Christmas, Mr. Potter. And then he says, Merry Christmas to you in jail. And I think that's the last you you hear of Old Man Potter. So there was one holdout. But that's what I think it is.
The man who didn't keep Christmas.
Yeah.
There's an amazing amount of magic that comes with the season, isn't there? There's when the snow falls and everything has that nice gleam of white and covers up all of the ugliness underneath. That's very emblematic of our ability to share with each other and to see the good in others in this season. And that's beyond religion. That's about culture. And I think that pop culture piece certainly adds to that.
Yeah. And what you just said, you know, reminds me of, you know, the Irving Berlin song that recorded by Bing Crosby, White Christmas. And because he sang that song for the first time over the radio on Christmas Day in 1941. So obviously we're talking about just a few weeks after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Hmm. So every able-bodied young man was enlisting. And so that lyric, "I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know," that's why that song resonated so much, because these young men were faced with going overseas. Maybe some of them, or you know, sure, thousands of them already were overseas, and they were thinking about home. And because that's another thing, when I think of those snowy Christmases from my childhood, I just think of like the trees covered in snow, and then those giant dangerous 1950s colored light bulbs, you know, peeking out from the frozen snow, you know, and melting them, you know.
Even the first lyric of that, as they introduced the song, it's being introduced from LA and it's sunny mm-hmm. out. And the singer introduced like, well, it's sunny in LA and it's beautiful, but they're dreaming of this, what in our minds could be this classic Christmas or American Christmas, because in other parts of the world, Australia, it's summertime. And so mm-hmm. their version of what the holiday could be a little different.
And that nostalgia. I love that feeling of that nostalgia. Those Christmases I used to know.
Mm-hmm. So in January 3rd, 1863, Harper's Weekly magazine publishes what would be our first modern Santa Claus. And how did Thomas Nat, our illustrator, how did he change Christmas?
He really came up with like the first modern incarnation of Santa Claus. The very first time he saw Santa Claus, he had a dark beard and a Cossack hat, and he did not look like a warm character. But Thomas Nast, you know, gave him warmth, gave him the white beard, gave him a costume resembling what would follow. But it looks very old fashioned. Today, if you showed that Santa Claus, as influential as it was, as much of a turning point as it was, if you show that Santa Claus to a child, they might not recognize it. I think an event that happened not too much later, when Coca-Cola hired an artist named Haddon Sundblom to paint a series of advertisements for print advertisements in color, beginning in 1930 for Coca-Cola, and that ran through at least the 60s, maybe even the 70s. And he's the guy who took Thomas Nast Santa Claus and softened all the edges. He made him a warm, sweet, cherry-cheeked,
dare I say, holly jolly.
Yes. Yes. And that is the one that survived. Like, to this day, if they make new Santa Claus movies, he most closely resembles the Haddon Sundblom Santa Claus, you know. And it's interesting to note, I won't bore you, but it's interesting to note that 2 years later, Santa Claus appeared in a Laurel and Hardy film called The March of the Wooden Soldiers. This is 2 years later. And that Santa Claus is the modern Santa Claus. He looks just like, he was the first movie Santa Claus to look like this, but he has the same, you know, sleepy hat and beard and the big belt and the black boots. And obviously that Santa Claus was influenced by the Haddon Sundblom Santa Claus. So they were off to the races.
Now, I was really fascinated by the Christmas cards during World War II, the Santa Claus has gone to war card, where he's got like the helmet Your Gift, Plenty of Weapons, The Inland Way for USA? Or what about the one where Santa Claus has a little bit of blood on his face, I think? Dear Santa, these are for our boys on the fighting front. They'll deliver them to Misters Hitler, Jojo, and Mussolini. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good fight. And so that was like, those really stood out from all of the other cards and images that you had from the period.
Santa with a gun. Yeah, it's shocking. But of course, when you look back on wartime pop culture, it's funny to note, I'd love to go to a film festival that had all these movies at once, but Laurel and Hardy fought the Nazis. Uh-huh. The Invisible Man, believe it or not, the horror character, the Invisible Man, fought the Nazis. The movie was called Invisible Agent. And, you know, the Bowery Boys and,
Three Stooges, sir.
Yeah, the Three Stooges. They didn't actually fight the Nazis. They played the Nazis.
That's right.
But you have them doing a parody of Hitler, much like Charlie Chaplin did with The Great Dictator. And, it's amazing. Oh, it's Sherlock Holmes. Speaking of y'all, yep, with Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes made a series of films where they set it in modern times in the early 40s. And he fought the Nazis, and Moriarty worked for the Nazis. So that guy's evil, man.
We throw this out like somehow it's in the past, but I think it was last week. It's today, a 2020 release. Mel Gibson plays Santa Claus. And he's got a gun, and he's got vigilantism. I guess that's what this story's about. So even today, Santa Claus is out there fighting the good fight, I guess.
I'll be curious to see what kind of seasonal 2020 Christmas cards and memes include Santa. I'm sure we're about to start seeing them, like, today.
So one of my favorite poems was the Henry Wadsworth Longfellow Christmas Bells poem that was released on Christmas Day in 1863. Can you share with us a little bit of the story? So what was going on in Longfellow's life?
Well, sure. It is a sweet moment. He was having a tough time at the time. You know, his second wife had died in an accidental fire. And also his son had enlisted and had a terrible injury and couldn't complete his service. So it was a tough time for him. And knowing that, when you read the poem, you wonder if it was like, if that magic that Steve had alluded to earlier, if that had like captured him that morning, that like a day where like, man, I've had a bad year. I've had a bad 2 years. His wife had died within the past 2 years. But it's Christmas morning and all is calm, all is bright. And this poem just popped out of my head because that's what I do. So I think that might have been what it was. It was a respite from terrible things that were going on in his life, and again that's what the culture does for us. We're all having a tough year, but when Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer animated special comes on, we can turn it on, and then for about an hour we can forget our troubles, you know. And then another interesting thing about that poem is it was set to music. But it was set to music several times. I don't know if there's one version, probably the one, the melody written by Johnny Marks that Bing Crosby and many others recorded is the one that we think of. But there were some before, there are some modern ones where they kind of throw out the melody that Marks wrote and make their own. And that's an interesting thing about Christmas carols themselves is that There are Christmas carols that where the melodies are actually classic compositions that fit the metering. So that, you know, but they're not really original. The melodies aren't really original to that particular Christmas carol.
Well, in fact, I mean, that all took place obviously during the Civil War, and just a few years later. And we think that Christmas has been around forever, but it became a federal holiday. And it came under President Grant, Civil War general, and now president. So June 28, 1870. It sounds like this is the time that Christmas became a legal and unpaid holiday for federal employees in District of Columbia. And eventually it kind of makes its way to everyone else in the United States. What other, I mean, types of trivia that did you kind of pull out? I mean, that was to me a fascinating story.
The thing about that I always wondered about was, you know, the separation of church and state, and you're taking a Christian holiday and making it a federal holiday. It almost seems like sticking your neck out. But I think that was in its way another acknowledgement that that Christmas has gone beyond, you know, the original religious origins. It represents something else. It represents something for more people. At the time that Grant made that proclamation, also 4th of July and New Year's Day were included in there also. I mean, you talk about trivia. I mean, I always wondered why is Thanksgiving not reliably the, you know, you never know which of the last Thursdays it's going to be. And that's because FDR, in answer to the Depression, he wanted to add shopping days to like another week of Christmas shopping to the Christmas season to help all the vendors and businesses. And nobody ever put it back. So we still are like, when's Thanksgiving this year? You know,
there were protests. They call it Franksgiving. Yeah, you're right. He moved it and basically established when the date would be, the fourth Thursday of the month.
Yeah, and not to rabbit hole, there's a movie called Holiday Inn from 1942, starring Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire. And it was the first movie in which Bing sang White Christmas. Mm-hmm. And the conceit of the film is that they open up a resort in nightclub where you could, but only on the holidays. So they had a Valentine's Day, Easter Day, Easter Parade is in there, you know. And when they do the, and that was the year, or soon after rather, that Roosevelt made that change. And they actually do a little animation. They have a turkey jumping back and forth on the calendar between the two Thursdays, trying to figure out which Thursday is Thanksgiving.
Ah, that's, in many ways, that's kind of like figuring out which day that the Jewish holidays are, or Easter for Christians. It's like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, all right, it's in this calendar, and what day is it?
Yeah. Good luck. If you're in Indiana, you don't know what time it is either, so good luck.
Let's move forward and talk a little bit about the secular Christmas-themed stories that get established. And, you know, we have characters like Howdy Doody and Mighty Mouse and the Chipmunks. And then we have original characters like Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and the Grinch. Can you share with us something you learned about these stories and the authors that put those together?
Well, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is very interesting because you talk about marketing. He began as a department store mascot. And in the 40s, in late 40s, the Montgomery Ward chain.
Did you just mention Chicago's Montgomery Ward?
Yeah,
chain?
I was about to say, I know that, Mark.
But maybe everyone else doesn't, because Montgomery right. Ward is no longer with us.
Oh, yeah.
He passed away.
Yeah. Monty, they called him. Yeah. But some people call him Wardy. But anyway, so they commissioned a poem, and then they made a booklet. And but it was still, you can only get it at the store. And it was when Johnny Marks, who was actually the brother-in-law of the gentleman who wrote the poem, set it to music. And the first person to record it was Gene Autry, who was a singing cowboy. And he's a lot of, his movies are a lot of fun. But he had a number one hit with it, if you could imagine. And the same thing with Frosty the Snowman. That character began as a song recorded by Gene Autry that was released as a single, because now he's on a roll. He's like, now what can I do now? You know, Dominic the Christmas Donkey hadn't been thought of yet. But now the Grinch, of course, began life as a Dr. Seuss children's book, mm-hmm. Written by Theodore Geisel, and you know, the author of Cat in the Hat and One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish, and Green Eggs and Ham. And so he wrote that book. He put it out in 1957, and an old cohort of his, Chuck Jones, the Bugs Bunny animator, they had collaborated during the war on on shorts, on animated shorts that were public service announcements for soldiers. You know, don't do this, do that. You know, I won't go into you know, great detail, but Chuck Jones kept saying, "Let me animate this. Let me animate this." And Theodore Geisel kept turning him down. And so 1 year, finally, Chuck got his way. And what he did was both faithful, wholly faithful to the book, and also a wild departure, which is amazing. How can you do both things at once? It's paradoxical. That's how that character was born. So they all have their different ways of coming into existence, we're the richer for it.
In fact, I was looking at some of the pictures that you put together, and the vintage dolls, they have the Santas and the elves and stuff like that, but they certainly look like the modern Elf on the Shelf. So it looks like there's some deep historical roots there. What makes the design of elves, you know, so special?
Elves began as German folklore, and they were magical beings. And it's amazing how much of Christmas culture did come over from Germany in the 1600s, like Christmas trees, you know, like so much stuff started there. Then it kind of made its way to England, and then it hopped the pond to America. But Santa Claus was in one of his earliest incarnations, himself was an elf. And there's a children's book from the late 1800s, purported to be illustrated by Thomas Nast, but there were two illustrators, I believe. It's kind of hard to get the details. But Santa Claus is actually, he's still the Santa Claus as he looks, but he's tiny. It kind of explains, like when you see him in the downstairs living room putting toys around, he's smaller than the furniture. So I guess that's when he was still elfish, and but it explains how he got down the chimney all those years, because if he could make himself small, he'd get down the chimney. Everybody always wondered, like, how's a fat man get down the chimney? So you know, at a certain point, of course, elves became Santa's helpers. I think one of the things that really pushed that out was Walt Disney. He did animated shorts around the time, not every moment of which are politically correct, that showed the elves, you know, merrily working, putting toys together, even though there's no salary, no benefits, and no chance for advancement. And getting back to the 1964 Rudolph special, that's one of the coolest songs in the special is by Johnny Marks, is We Are Santa's Elves. That, to my generation, we're like, oh, okay, that's how it works. They're elves and they build the toys and they're happy, and you know, that's what an elf is. So yeah, the Elf on a Shelf kind of looks like those elves, maybe starting with Disney and traveling through to the Rankin-Bass special of 1964.
I was going to mention Canada's Bare Naked Ladies for Pam, because the the song Elf's Lament talks about the lack of benefits.
Wow, I thought that was all mine. And another thing is that Santa did not allow Coca-Cola to be drunk by the elves, because diabetes wasn't covered.
Oh boy.
Good night, everybody.
That's right. So with your previous books, your design skills certainly are celebrated. You know, we celebrate many of the visual styles of the holiday. Can you tell us the challenges of working with the color red?
Oh, yeah, that's true, because, there's three Christmas colors, red, green, and then gold, you know, and then everything else. There's a lot of red in Holly Jolly, of course. But it was fun. You just have, as a designer, you just have to make sure that that your color schemes are complementary, and that you're not overdoing it on any one color. So something has to pop. Everything can't pop, but something has to pop on a given spread. Like my spine for Holly Jolly is diagonal stripes of green and red, because that to me looks like wrapping paper. I always think of that wrapping paper that was like diagonal red, green stripes, you know. So yeah, sure. Designing it was actually a playground, because there's so much rich material. it's almost like you had just had to get out of its way. You just had to present it perfect it, and then present it in a way that flows. But each piece itself was exquisite. I mean, I should have counted, but I know there are thousands of images in it. I didn't count it, but like I said, it was a playground. It was just so much fun, to immerse yourself in that world for a couple years.
Sure. So Mark, our listeners, if they wanted to learn more about your projects, your previous projects, your future projects, where could they go to learn more?
I have no idea, Chip. Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. MarkBoger.com. And Holly Jolly is, you can find it on, BarnesandNoble.com, Target, Amazon, Walmart. The publisher's website also is twomorrows.com, T-W-O, and then Morrows. You can get it pretty much anywhere books are sold online. There's excerpts and on markboger.com. And I have a great trailer, so make sure you look for that. It's on the homepage that my genius filmmaker nephew, Ian Vogelsong, created. And it's out of this world.
It is. It is fascinating.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And it's terrific to hang out with y'all.
Oh, this is a fantastic book. Thank you, Mark. It truly is a wonderful thing. And for any listener that is looking for a holiday treat to celebrate the season, this is a good book to get. And certainly the family will enjoy reading it.
Film at 11.
That brings us to our Film at 11, our movie of the week. Remember, hey Chip, remember when we did the Film at 11, a movie of the week?
That's right. That was back when Too Much Scrolling had multiple different offerings. We do the book of the week now.
Book of the month now. Yeah. We're doing monthly now.
Much deeper than what we used to do.
So there's some movies coming out in the next couple of weeks, and these are our 2020 holiday season offerings.
It's not a complete list of stuff that's coming out. It is something, though, to be on a watch out for, and obviously you can find something that your family or you may have interest in. Steve, let's start off with Netflix, Angela's Christmas Wish.
The sequel to Angela's Christmas, which was released in 2017, the tale of a young Irish girl finding her wish for family in this holiday. Oh,
all right. And many people wonder where all those Christmas letters go. So on December 4th, IFC Documentary has a documentary called Dear Santa, which talks a little bit about the United States Postal Service. I'm wondering if this is somehow maybe a little propaganda on the essential need of the Postal Service.
I didn't think of that. You are absolutely right. This is a very touching story about people caring about others. And you're right. It is also, hey, the Postal Service is really important.
Well, it talks a little bit about where those letters goes and who answers those letters. So this should be something that is very, very nice. Steve, on Netflix on December 11th, what many kids missed in 2020 was The Prom.
Yeah, everybody loves having that terrible night of memories to remember for the rest of your life.
Oh, some people, it's a great night of memories. This is a musical. It stars Meryl Streep, Nicole Kidman, and James Corden, among a lot of others. And let's talk a little bit about, dystopian worlds. And we can go on December 18th. There is Greenland, and that's going to be streaming for you.
Yes, Pam, this is a dystopia, cataclysmic, natural disaster, a family fighting their way to get to Greenland to safety as the world gets struck by asteroids and they want to survive.
There's actually some real-life science that's based on this. I think a year or so ago, they found a meteor, an asteroid, something that had hit Greenland, and it's in the news if you want to look it up. Steve, do we need to find something about the comeback trail?
Yeah, it's time for our weekly annual baby boomer. Hey, there's some actors who are still alive and they'd like some work movie, and that's called The Comeback Trail this week.
Robert De Niro, Morgan Freeman, Tommy Lee Jones.
Playing old curmudgeons in a movie.
All right. So that comes out on the 18th of December. On the 23rd of December, The Midnight Sky, starring George Clooney, comes out. Post-apocalyptic tale of, what can I say?
Yes, there's an apocalypse on Earth, and there's a International Space Station in space, and George Clooney is trying to radio to them to tell them not to come back to Earth.
Now, I think it's pretty interesting that he's a lonely scientist in the Arctic. We've got Greenland, we've got Arctic, we've got our nostalgia for white Christmases, right? I mean, I do think that all of this ties together in this moment of climate catastrophe. And so these Cli-Fi films are actually tapping into some anxieties that Christmas nostalgia we were just talking about are also addressing, but in an opposite way.
I was just wondering if this was part two of Gravity. You know, George Clooney kind of let go of the rope and was just floating out there. And maybe this is the follow-up.
Never mind.
All right, so let's wake up Christmas morning. Everybody's had a good morning. It looks like we have a couple gifts from us. One is from Disney Plus. It's a Pixar film. It's called Soul.
Yeah, this is one of those Pixar films, and it was supposed to be released, but since nobody's going to the movie theater, they're putting it on Disney Plus. This was one of those highly anticipated. This is a story of a musician searching for his passion, and then he dies, and his soul goes to the afterlife, and then he has to find his way back to Earth. Very interesting.
So the twist is he died, the mother didn't die?
The mother was already dead in this one. He's a single father.
All right, let me skip down real quick to Wonder Woman 1984 has been announced to come out on HBO Max and at theaters on Christmas Day. This is a pretty amazing decision by HBO Max because this is such a film that should have been a $1 billion film, mm-hmm. and it's going to be released streaming through HBO Max for you. And this certainly is going to be a big film. We got a couple of films that could be at the theater, and that would be News of the World. It stars Tom Hanks as a Civil War veteran who discovers a young girl who's going to deliver her home. We've got another one through Amazon Prime called Sylvia's Love. That's a little bit about jazz in the 1950s. And our final one is Promising Young Woman that stars Harlequin, Margot Robbie. She's going to be taking on the subject of date rape, which certainly doesn't seem a very
holiday. In a vigilante style, where she lures young men to her home and then kills them, perhaps? The trailer doesn't say what she does to them, but she does something to them.
Well, traditionally, on Christmas Day, there's a whole group of people who do not celebrate Christmas. Many of them go to the theater to watch films, and they usually release a slate of films like for every demographic out there. So this certainly is a an interesting subject and an interesting way of addressing it.
When we're done watching Star Wars, you mean? We watch the 3 Star Wars movies on Christmas, and then we go to the theater.
Some families do, Steve. Some families do.
Traditions are important.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, Chip, it's one of your favorite things to talk about is the new Christmas music that's coming out in 2020.
Well, many years ago, Stephen Gobert had a Christmas special on, and his opening song in his Christmas special was about if you could just hit the lottery and you could have a Christmas song or a holiday song that would get played every year, you know, you've hit the ultimate lottery. And think of all the artists that you know. Amy Grant has a song that will come out. Johnny Mathis has a song that comes out. Bing Crosby has a song. You know, it's like if you listen to a holiday station, you're basically listening to lottery winners, because who would have thought that a holiday song could be such an evergreen? So this year's 2020's holiday pop recordings, and let's start off with Kelly Clarkson, "All I Want for Christmas Is You," which is not basically the Mariah Carey song, which shares the same name. This is a remake of the Vince Vance and the Valiants slow song from 1989. Vince Vance has that crazy hair. You should spend some time looking at it. It goes straight up. It's like I don't know, his hair's on fire or something. Certainly a very unique look. And Kelly Clarkson's got this beautiful voice. This is a wonderful recording of this song.
The 80s were all about big hair, Chip. I don't know if you know that about the 80s, but it was all about big hair.
Yeah, Vince Vance, even under that, was unique. and the singer, who is our female voice for the song, she's got this dress on, and it's got, I mean, she could play football with them because you got the big shoulder pads going.
Nice. That's some good nostalgia.
Oh, yes. Carrie Underwood came out with an album this year, an entire album, where Kelly Clarkson came out with just a single. And she's got her new recording is called My Gift. There's a number of classic songs. Certainly, there's a few new songs. Once again, trying to hit the lottery. For those of you who like country music, Dan and Shay have a single, Take Me Home for Christmas. It's available to watch. It's a nice song. And for all those kids out there that loved Disney's Tangled, because that was my daughter's, Mandy Moore has a song called How Could This Be Christmas? My kids would also be excited because the Jonas Brothers came out with I Need You Christmas, which is a single. And of course, All About That Bass, Meghan Trainor came out with My Kind of Present. Once again this year, we have Dolly Parton coming out with another Christmas album. And a lot of the songs are duets. And the one that they released as a single is the one with Canada's Michael Bubbles. I think that's what his name is, right? Bubbles?
I think that's French. So Pam has to say it.
So Michel Bublé? Who is it?
Well, I think Michael Bublé is going to enjoy that. And what I wanted to leave you with was, I was laughing because I played this song for my mother during the Thanksgiving holiday. Florida Georgia Line, the country group, has a song called Lit This Year, and basically says that the Christmas tree ain't the only thing getting lit this year. And it has a joyous celebration of other things that you can do to get lit.
So literature is an important part of the holiday, Pam.
Wow.
What a transition.
So that brings us to our upcoming conversation. We're going to get lit. No, that's not what that means. We're going to read some literature for December. And Chip, it's your turn to present your choice for the December book that we're going to read in Sandwiches at Irregular Hours.
Are we going to read some ghost stories?
Oh, some ghost stories for Christmas. That's what Christmas is all about, right?
Christmas is about giving, and it's about making people happy. And I know that one of the areas that Pam is very happy with is the Victorian era. So we're going to go maybe a little bit before it. Let's go do a little Charles Dickens and read some of the novellas that he wrote concerning the holiday season. And let's start off with 1843's A Christmas Carol.
Nice.
I'm really excited about this. I have to say that I've read many of Dickens's longer novels, but I haven't read any of these shorter novellas about Christmas. So this should be a lot of fun.
So there are five of them, and we're going to start with A Christmas Carol for next week. It is readily available because it was written in 1843, and I think everybody's pretty familiar with A Christmas Carol. We'll find out, though, because if we're like Pam and we haven't read these, maybe we'll find that they're different from the story that we think. We'll find out next week.
Well, there are plenty of faithful adaptions out there. And I'm going to give Steve his Christmas present, because if you look out there, there's one where Jean-Luc Picard reads A Christmas Carol.
Ooh, that does sound good.
All right. All right.
From a galaxy far, far away.
We're crossing the streams here, folks. So I'm excited about this. I hope everybody out there is just as excited getting into the holiday season, the Christmas season, getting into a story we like to call A Christmas Carol from Charles Dickens. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Mark Voger. His book Holly Jolly is available in bookstores everywhere or online, which is where we go to buy things nowadays, along with his other two books, Monster Mash and Groovy. It's so great to talk to him. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve, and have a bowl of gruel.
What do you think, Pam?
I'm going to go have a bowl of gruel, as indicated.
Doing what Chip says is bad advice, just so you know. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is sandwichesatregularhours.com. Our email is sandwichesatregularhours@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and even on YouTube. So you can find us everywhere. I want to thank you again for listening to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasselblad. Snowmeiser.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
We'll see you in the ghost of Christmas future.